Welcome to the Prison Radio Show here on SKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Candace, and I'm your host for today's show. Today's episode focuses on Prisoners' Justice Day. Every August 10th, prisoners participate in Prisoners' Justice Day by fasting and refusing to work for the day. The practice dates back to 1975, when imprisoned people at Millhaven Penitentiary, located outside Kingston, Ontario, organized a day-long hunger strike, work stoppage, and memorial service to honor Eddie Nalin and Robert Landers. Eddie Nalin died in segregation by suicide after callous treatment by the guards and administration, and Robert Landers died of medical neglect and segregation 1 year later. So today, Prisoners' Justice Day is observed across Canadian prisons, despite prison administration's attempts, of course, to suppress the annual Day of Remembrance and Day of Action. On the outside, Prisoners' Justice Day is an occasion for formerly incarcerated people, families, and activists to come together, share experiences, raise awareness, and publicly oppose state-sanctioned violence. Last Thursday, August 10th, Prisoners' Justice Day was commemorated in many institutions and across cities in Montreal, where we stand to Ojiage. Unfortunately, the planned vigil that was supposed to take place at Parc Vinette was canceled due to, you may recall, heavy rain, thunderstorms. But we are able to share with you here today on the radio, on the Prison Radio Show, a few of the speeches that would have been delivered had the public gathering taken place in the park. We will hear the voices of Christophe Lewis and Wendy Berthaud today on the program. We will also hear from Rick Sauvé, who did a lot of time in federal prisons and talks about both his experiences of Prisoners' Justice Day on the inside and his advocacy work on the outside. First, a couple of announcements.
Are you a tenant in Montreal? Do you have questions about your rights? Your local housing committee can help. To find the housing committee for your neighborhood or for more resources, go to www.rclalq.qc.ca.
Thursday, August 24th, at Turbo House, a benefit concert to support victims of intimate partner violence, featuring Rufus Cesspool, Debbie Christ, The Rejectors, and Teenage Witch. Tickets are only $15, and all proceeds will be donated to SOS Violence Conjugale. Show starts at 8 p.m.
Here is Christophe Lewis.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Christophe Lewis here. I'm making this recording for Prisoners' Justice Day 2023. I was fortunate to be a part of the prisoner justice initiatives from the outside, from outside prison walls last year for 2022. So this is my second year being able to take part in solidarity with my brothers and sisters that are still behind bars. I'm thankful for another year, you know. Thankful for another year just in life in general, but thankful for another year partially free from custody, you know? So, and I say partially free because really at the end of the day, I'm not completely free because I'm still on parole for the rest of my life, according to what CSC has, what the justice system has sentenced me to. So that being said, I'm thankful either way for whatever situation I'm dealing with. Thankful for life, thankful for partial freedom, and thankful most of all that I'm able to give back to my brothers and sisters that are still behind them prison walls. I'm now on full parole, so I'm no longer subjected to a halfway house, but still have the conditions of someone with a life sentence. So, you know, it still ain't easy, but it's better than where I was last year. So all praise is due to the Most High for that. I know all too well what it's like to be released under tough conditions, under restraint. I got released and tried a bunch of different things to get my life back in order and back on track. It wasn't easy, you know, being released during COVID time. I got released with no ID and was desperately attempting to put the puzzle pieces to my life back together. Nonetheless, I'm still here. I was able to attain all my IDs, well, not all, most of them. I'm still waiting for some IDs that the Toronto police had stolen and not given back to me. But whatever IDs I'm allowed to have as a parolee, I'm working on getting those. And I got a few of them, at least the necessary ones for me to manage myself in society. And I say all that because I'm trying to caution people that, you know, I don't know which one of my brothers and sisters are going to be hearing this within prison walls, but make sure that when you're on your way out, regardless of if you're being supported or not supported, like I wasn't supported by my case management team, still apply for all your IDs. Make sure that you get your stuff in order so that when you get out, your transition is easier. Because trust me, my transition was not. So that's just a cautionary tale. But other than that, you know, I got out, I tried the school thing, I tried this, I tried that, multiple different jobs, and I'm happy to announce that I was fortunate enough to become the founder of my first nonprofit organization, the Freedoms Among Us Foundation, which is thriving and in full effect. So I would like to play an audio clip for you guys from a friend of a deceased person that was murdered by correctional officers in Exeter Prison in London, Ontario. This is graphic, and I just want to caution everybody, give a trigger warning that this may be triggering, but nonetheless, I think it needs to be heard. So without further ado, here we go.
On July 5th, five correctional officers murdered my friend Brandon for throwing a towel. On July 5th, that small, childlike act of defiance was all it took for Brandon to forfeit his life in the eyes of those five COs. Other inmates say Brandon pleaded for mercy, begging for forgiveness, asking them to stop. The beating did end, and Brandon was left alone in his cell, crying and whimpering through the night until there was no sound at all. Despite likely passing away in the early hours of July 6th and being found unresponsive in his cell, correctional officers performed one last degrading act on his body and his spirit. They handcuffed an unresponsive Brandon. This man who had cried out for mercy like a child, as if he were a monster. Brandon was not a monster. He was murdered by them. Brandon was gregarious, everywhere he went, making friends with people. You either knew Brandon or knew someone who did. I think it was because on top of being spontaneous and silly, he was always performing acrobatics, stunts, and climbing the strangest things. Who doesn't want to know that person? Brandon could pull you out of that dark mood and have you roaring with laughter. Brandon was bursting with love for people. On the odd occasion where he'd get it backwards, it wouldn't be long before he realized he was being ignorant and missing out on another beautiful friendship. Brandon would be your biggest ally and boost you up in any way he could. He couldn't always make it, but you always knew he was by your side in spirit. Brandon was also an MMA fighter. I think it was a way for him to dispel all that energy And if we're keeping it real, he loved to look good. But being an MMA fighter didn't mean that Brandon was a violent man. He was a kid in an adult-sized body. That's part of what makes this death of his so hard to accept. Brandon wasn't being violent. He hadn't squared up or thrown a punch. Brandon threw a towel at a CO after being denied his shower. Five correctional officers beat Brandon, even as he begged and pleaded for them to stop. Brandon was tapping out, but there was no referee to save him, and only a hushed crowd of terrified inmates to look on. Those same inmates listened as Brandon was left alone in his cell, his pain-filled cries echoing down the cell block unheeded. My friend Brandon died scared, in pain, and alone. If that towel had been thrown at five men in the locker room of an MMA gym, those men would be murderers, each one arrested and charged and waiting for their day in court. Yet not one man has been held accountable thus far. Taking it even further, these same COs now claim this tiny protest that occurs outside of the jail where Brandon was murdered has them afraid for their lives. When I hear those kinds of statements, I know what it really means. More people like my friend Brandon will be murdered because those five COs and ones just like them think no one cares. I care. Others care. And soon others will too. I refuse to watch more lights like Brandon's be snuffed out until we're all standing here in the dark. Instead, we will burn brightly and collectively as a shared flame, so bright that it forces the truth out into the light. They did not steal Brandon's light when they stole his life. Instead, he lights the path ahead.
Man, that's some powerful ish, man. Rest in peace to Brandon and condolences to his family and friends. Real talk, freedom's a must, man. Oftentimes, our strongest leaders and sharpest thinkers are sent to prison. If you think of people like Nelson Mandela, Martin Luther King, Mahatma Gandhi, Malcolm X, you know, Marcus Garvey, to name a few. These are some of, you know, our strongest leaders in history, and they were faced with incarceration at some point in time. I say all that to say, you know, when I say I'm a survivor of the prison system, one should understand, because if you know, you know. The prison system is just a cell from the nucleus called the system of government. I was fortunate enough to walk out with my life after being assaulted by multiple guards. There was 30 involved, but you can see on camera about 8 to 10 that are physically involved in the assault on my person. This happened in 2012, and I'm still fighting to this day. One guard was charged, Kay Blair, and had been actively working this whole time while I was incarcerated. And then once I was, just before I was released, I'd had my colleagues lobby to members of parliament and just anyone that would listen. And eventually the lobbying was heard and the OPP got involved and they decided to lay charges on one individual. It's so eerily similar to this recording I just played to you by the friend of Brandon. And he speaks on the fact that if that had happened within the context of a MMA gym, all of the participants would have been charged with more severe charges and been sentenced to imprisonment. Though I am happy that there was some accountability on the part of the justice system in terms of finding at least one guard guilty, I still feel like we're not holding everyone to account, which is why I'm a firm believer that there is two different justice systems, one for the condemned and one for the more privileged. And the fight for me will continue. because it's not for me. It's much bigger than me. It's for those that have no voice. So I say all that to say Prisoners Justice Day means a lot to me, regardless of if I'm incarcerated or I'm a free man or partially free man. Freedom will always be a must, and I want everyone to stand in solidarity, not just when incarceration affects you or your family, but when it affects everybody, because we're not free until we're all free. And that is something I want everybody to take into consideration. Please check out the Freedom is a Must Foundation. Check out our website at freedomisamustfoundation.org. And you could also find us on Instagram at freedomisamustfoundation at Instagram. Or you could go to my personal Instagram at freedom_is_amust, one word, at Instagram. And yeah, just follow the movement, be a part of it, support, share, follow, comment, and all that stuff. Freedom's a must.
That was Christoph Lewis, and you are listening to the Prison Radio Show here on SKUT 90.3 FM, 91.7 on cable, and online at SKUT.ca. This is our Prisoners Justice Day special, and this year's local Prisoners Justice Organizing Committee, their statement, they remind us that conditions inside prisons have continued to worsen since the COVID-19 pandemic started. Though COVID precautions are pretty much non-existent on the outside, many people inside prisons continue to face restricted gym, library, and yard access, as well as an increased number of lockdowns. Prisoners have been organizing to improve their conditions. This last year saw a big hunger strike at Hamilton's Barton Jail, as well as an open letter from people locked up in the federal system about stopping the re-implementation of Harper-era pay cuts. In the legal arena, this past year saw the conviction of a guard who beat up Christoph Lewis, who you just heard from, who was imprisoned in Millhaven Penitentiary at the time. In May, another guard was convicted of sexual assault and breach of trust against a prisoner at the Vanier Center for Women. While a couple of guards are facing some consequences for their actions, this year's Prisoners Justice Day Organizing Committee asserts there is no justice in the colonial courts and that true justice would be the closure of all prisons and the end of patriarchy, white supremacy, and capitalism. Here is Wendy Barito on the Prison Radio Show.
Bonjour, je me présente, Joanne Wendy Barito. Je suis une parmi plusieurs organisatrices de la journée de justice des prisonniers de la région de Montréal. Malheureusement, cette année, à la température, nous avons dû canceller notre événement en personne. Mais par contre, avec ce live streaming-là et la radio des prisonniers, je peux quand même vous passer notre petit message de la journée des prisonniers. Je vais débuter en français et par la suite, je passerai à l'anglais. Tous les 10 août, les personnes incarcérées tentent de leur mieux de participer à la journée de justice des prisonniers en jeûnant et en refusant de travailler toute la journée. Cette pratique remonte à 1975, lorsque des personnes incarcérées au pénitencier de Millhaven, situé à l'extérieur de Kingston, en Ontario, ont organisé une grève de la faim d'une journée et un arrêt de travail, ainsi qu'un service commémoratif honorant Edward Nolan et Robert Launders. Edward Nolan s'est enlevé la vie alors qu'il était en isolement après avoir subi un traitement cruel de la part des gardes et de l'administration. Robert Launders est décédé à la suite de négligence médicale lorsqu'il était en isolement un an plus tard. Aujourd'hui, la journée de justice des prisonniers est pratiquée dans des prisons partout au Canada, ainsi qu'à travers le monde entier. Bien que l'administration des prisons provinciales et fédérales mette de plus en plus d'énergie à bloquer cette action, À l'extérieur, la journée de justice des prisonniers est une opportunité pour les gens formellement incarcérés, leurs familles et les militants et militantes de se réunir, de partager leur expérience, de faire de la sensibilisation et de s'opposer publiquement à la violence sanctionnée par l'État. Les conditions à l'intérieur des prisons ont continué de se dégrader depuis le début de la pandémie de COVID-19. Tandis que les précautions contre la COVID sont pratiquement inexistantes à l'extérieur, de nombreuses personnes à l'intérieur des prisons continuent d'être confrontées à des restrictions. Les gens incarcérés ont depuis commencé à s'organiser afin d'améliorer leurs conditions. L'année dernière, une importante grève de la faim a eu lieu à la prison Borton à Hamilton. Une lettre ouverte écrite par des personnes incarcérées au fédéral ont été publiées dans le but d'empêcher le retour des réductions de salaire de l'ère Harper. Sur le plan juridique, nous commençons à avoir des accusations portées contre des gardiens de prison qui se sont fait prendre à commettre des actes horribles envers des personnes incarcérées. L'année dernière, un garde a été reconnu coupable de force extrême sur la personne de Christopher Lewis, qui était incarcéré au pénitencier de Millhaven à l'époque et qui a pris la parole à l'événement l'année passée à Montréal. Mais un garde a été reconnu coupable d'agression sexuelle et d'abus de confiance à l'envers d'une personne au centre Vanny pour femmes, une prison provinciale située à Milton en Ontario. Bien qu'il soit grand temps de voir quelques gardiens faire face aux conséquences de leurs actions, nous pensons qu'une véritable justice serait d'abolir toutes les prisons. Bien que la journée de justice des prisonniers est axée traditionnellement sur les personnes incarcérées et parfois même spécifiquement sur les personnes incarcérées dans les prisons fédérales, nous voulons élargir notre solidarité. Les centres de détention pour migrants, les établissements de soins de longue durée, les systèmes de placement en famille d'accueil, les hôpitaux psychiatriques sont autant d'institutions qui ciblent et enferment également les personnes autochtones, noires, de couleur, en situation de handicap, sans statut ou pauvres. Nous avons vu comme la nouvelle prison des migrants en banlieue de Montréal a entraîné une surveillance accrue et un accès réduit aux visites pour les personnes détenues. Sans charge, je dois ajouter. Nous voyons en ce moment même le gouvernement provincial prétendre que la nouvelle prison pour femmes qui remplacera l'ancienne maison Tanguay et la prison de Lecaire réglerait les problèmes auxquels sont confrontées les femmes incarcérées à Lecaire. Nous savons que ce sont de belles promesses. De nouvelles prisons signifient plus de personnes en prison. De nouvelles prisons signifient plus de surveillance. Les programmes vont et viennent, mais une fois que les bâtiments sont construits, la capacité d'emprisonner plus de personnes est là. Nous savons que l'abolition peut dire que tout cela doit disparaître. C'est pourquoi cette année encore, à l'occasion de la journée des prisonniers, la journée de justice des prisonniers, nous nous battons et nous nous souvenons de toutes les personnes confrontées en enfermement dans différents types d'institutions et sous différentes formes de violence. On peut voir aussi cette année une demande des cautions plus sévères, des demandes de cautions plus sévères. Ça veut dire que plus de gens incarcérés dans les institutions provinciales, des gens qui sont non reconnus coupables et qui sont, d'après nos lois, non coupables jusqu'à preuve du contraire. La journée de justice des prisonniers est une occasion de se commémorer les gens qui ont travaillé, sacrifié et aussi c'est une journée pour tisser de nouveaux liens et nouvelles forces pour le meilleur futur. Commémorons-nous le 10 août. Hi, my name is Joanne Wendy. I'm one of the many organizers of the Prisoners Justice Day in Montreal. Unfortunately, this year, due to severe weather warnings, that's been the country, we had to cancel our in-person but we have a live stream and we'll have probably some speakers through the live stream and my opening statements that we planned for the event I will be doing on video in the basement at my home. Every August 10th, prisoners participate in Prisoner Justice Day and refusing to work for a day. The practice dates back to 1975 when imprisoned people in Millhaven Penitentiary, located outside Kingston, Ontario, organized a day-long hunger strike, work stoppage, and memorial service to honor Edward Nolan and Robert Landers. Edward Nolan died in segregation by suicide after callous treatment by the guards and administration. And Landers died of medical negligence in segregation 1 year later. Today, Prisoner Justice Day is observed across Canada prisons, through prison administration, across Canada and across the world. Though prison administrators have increasingly suppressed these actions, on the outside, Prisoner Justice Day is an occasion for formerly incarcerated people, families, and activists to come together, share experiences, raise awareness, and publicly oppose state-sanctioned violence. Conditions inside prisons have continued to worsen since COVID-19 pandemic started. Though COVID precautions are pretty much non-existent on the outside, many people inside prison continue to face restrictions. Prisoners have been organizing to improve their conditions. This last year saw a big hunger strike in Hamilton Bolton Jail, as well as an open letter from people locked up in federal systems about stopping the re-implementation of Harper-era pay cuts. In the legal arena, we are starting to see charges against prison guards who are caught doing horrible things to prisoners. This past year saw the conviction of a guard who beat up Christopher Lewis, who was in prison in Millhaven Penitentiary at the time and has been at a vigil last year in Montreal. In May, a guard was also convicted of sexual assault and breach of trust against a prisoner at a Vanier Centre for Women, a provincial prison in Milton, Ontario. While it is nice to see a couple of guards face some consequences to their actions, we think that true justice would be the closure of all prisons and the end of patriarchy, white supremacy, and capitalism. Though Prison Justice Day is traditionally focused on people in prisons, and sometimes even specifically prisoners in federal prisons, we want to broaden our solidarity. Immigration detention centers, long-term care facilities, foster care settings, and mental health hospitals are all institutions that also target the confined Indigenous peoples, Black, POC, disabled, non-status, and poor people. We have watched how the new prison for migrant in the suburbs of Montreal have meant increased surveillance and less access to community visits for those detained there. And might I say, found guilty of no charges other than being illegal immigrants, from what they say. We are watching the provincial government claim that the new prisons for women that will be replace the old Maison Tanguay in Le Clair will solve the problems facing the women in Le Clair. We know that's not absolutely correct. New prisons mean more people in prisons. More beds mean more people in prison. New prisons mean more surveillance. Program comes and go, but once the buildings are built, the capacity to imprison people is there and stays. We know abolition means it must all go. We fight for and remember everyone facing confinement across different kinds of institution and different forms of violence. Prisoner Justice Day is an occasion to remember those who have suffered in the past and to also build connections and empower us for a better present and future. Let's remember August 10th. We're also seeing a louder voice about tougher bail measures. which will also mean more people incarcerated in provincial prison in remand. The rate right now of people that are incarcerated, that are in prison, that have not been found guilty of any crime is very high, over 50%. More beds means that it will be higher, and tougher bail sanctions will also mean more people in prison that have been found guilty of nothing. They're just accused. Our justice system says you're innocent until proven guilty, and this should stand. And there should be no exceptions. Thank you for spending some time with me. And hopefully we'll see you in person next year. Merci d'avoir passé du temps avec moi. Et on croise nos doigts qu'on se voit en personne l'année prochaine. Good night.
That was Wendy Barreto, one of the members of the local Prisoners Justice Day organizing committee. You are listening to the Prison Radio Show here on CQT 90.3 FM, where we are sharing with you speeches and interviews from a couple of Prisoners Justice Day events that took place in different places on August 10th. Prisoners Justice Day is, of course, an occasion to remember those who have died inside prisons and other institutions, and also a day to build connections and power for a better present and future. Next on the program, we are going to hear from Rick Sauvé, who spoke last Thursday, August 10th, for Prisoners Justice Day as part of international broadcast that was streamed online through the Criminalization and Punishment Education Project Facebook page. So here is Rick Sauvé. We also hear the voices of Desmond Cole and L. Jones here on Prison Radio Show on CQT.
Good evening and welcome to our national broadcast for Prisoner Justice Day. I'm Elle Jones and I'm going to be co-hosting along with Desmond Cole.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the 48th commemoration of Prisoners Justice Day. I'm speaking to you from Treaty 13, Toronto, Tekaronto, the traditional territory of many nations, including the Mississaugas of the Credit First Nation, the Anishinaabe, the Haudenosaunee, and the Huron-Wendat. It is a great honor and a pleasure to be part of this broadcast once again this year. And thank you so much to everybody who's organized this through the Abolition Coalition and our partners across the country. It's a pleasure to be with everybody.
To begin with, we're going to tell you a little bit about what this day is. Some people, of course, have been joining us for the many years we've been doing this broadcast now. But for some of you, this may be your first commemoration of this day. So Desmond Cole is going to start by telling you a little bit about how this day got started and why it's so significant.
So, as many of you who join us every year will know, Eddie Nalin died alone in a segregation cell in Millhaven Maximum Security Penitentiary, located in Kingston, Ontario, Canada, on August the 10th of 1974. A year later, Prisoners' Justice Day was first observed, and it was observed by imprisoned people held in the same federal penitentiary who engaged in a one-day hunger strike and a work strike in support of their demands to end solitary confinement and other injustices behind bars. Since then, Prisoners Justice Day has been marked by people inside and outside of prison walls across the world demanding change. As prisons continue to exist and continue to kill, Prisoners Justice Day events are once again taking place across the country today to commemorate the lives lost to human caging and to stand in solidarity with prisoners, along with their loved ones who are demanding changes to save lives behind and beyond bars, including an end to solitary confinement and segregation-like measures that have become further entrenched during this age of disruption plagued by the COVID-19 pandemic, floods, forest fires, and poorer quality heat waves and other preventable disasters. In this context, there is, of course, a need to work towards decarceral futures, where resources currently invested in human caging are redirected to people, to communities, to people pushed back by the margins, to the margins by colonialism, racism and white supremacy, capitalism and classism, patriarchy, heterosexism, ableism, and other violent structures to enhance our collective well-being and safety. In support of efforts to demand changes behind and beyond prison walls for criminalized people, the Abolition Coalition organizes this event, the 48th annual commemoration of Prisoners Justice Day and the fourth edition of Prisoners Justice Day TV, which we are honored to bring to you this evening. Elle.
Tonight we will share recorded footage from events held earlier in the day in Ottawa, Kingston, Toronto, and Regina. And we will also have live event footage from events happening tonight in Montreal, Toronto, Winnipeg, and Vancouver. We will also have interviews with formerly incarcerated people like Rick Sauvé, whose charter challenge won imprisoned people the right to vote in federal and provincial territorial elections, current prisoners, family members of people prison has killed, like Yusuf Fakiri of the Justice Pasoli campaign, as well as community organizers from groups like the Disability Justice Network of Ontario, Freelands Free Peoples, the P4W Memorial Collective, the Tracking Injustice Project, the Vancouver Prison Justice Day Committee, and more. We also have several statements to read throughout the broadcast, including from the Canadian Association of Elizabeth Fry Societies and Senator Kim Pate.
The Tracking Injustice Project, I should say, released a press conference, or press release today, excuse me, demonstrating, and I think we're going to bring this up on screen, that they have been doing some research and documentation of deaths of incarcerated people across Canada since the year 2000. We have some data in Canada when this comes to people killed by the police. But as far as we know, this is the most extensive documentation that we've had in recent years of people killed in incarceration, and that means immigration detention. That means in psychiatric incarceration, of course, jails and prisons. The number of people tallied by the Tracking Injustice Project who have died in incarceration since the year 2000 numbers 1,495 people. It is a shocking number, and the website that you're seeing on screen right now is a documentation. You see the scrolling list of names at the top, and those are the names just for this year, and we're going to honor those who have lost their lives already in 2023. The year is not out yet, but the Tracking Injustice Project goes further than that and goes back every year up to the year 2000 and names each of the 1,495 names that we know, some of which we don't know, of individuals who have died. So you see sometimes there it will say unknown, because there are many names of people whose lives have been taken from us through these carceral systems, and we don't even know their names. And so this is a huge undertaking and an important one in terms of commemoration, memorial, and accountability. Just for context, this number is approximately double the documented number of people who have been taken from us by the police over that same time period. It's a quite shocking and sad documentation, but one that we're really, really grateful for. So you can see that on screen, and you can go to the Tracking Injustice website, trackinginjustice.ca/in-memory, as you can see there on screen, and you are able to see what we're looking at live right now.
Later in the show, we will be interviewing Alex McClelland, who has been gathering these names and organizing this project. And you can, on that site, trackinginjustice.ca, find a blog post on the research process used to create this memorial. So if you're interested in how those names emerged and what the process was for doing this project, you can look on that page and find that post. So at this point, to begin our commemoration of this important day in Canada, we are going to read the names of the 45 people who have died behind bars across Canada in just the first 6 months of this year. And Desmond's going to start. So we remember that on this day, those inside are currently fasting and striking from work in order to not only commemorate the deaths of their comrades, but to continuing demanding better conditions for those inside.
And we honor the fact that there are lives behind these names that we're reading. There are spirits, there are existences, hopes, family, experiences lost. It's not just a name. These are the lives of people that we have had taken from us by the system. And so I will begin with some of the names of people who have been taken from us just in 2023. Michael Graham, Sebastian Chamberlain, Victor James, Nicholas Job, Cassandra Fox, unknown, Kinyu James, Giles Ogre, unknown, Peter Paul, Tommy Vivi, Thomas Haight, Steve Saray, Patrick Langevin, Eric Amaral, unknown, Gary Donald Johnston, unknown, Melvin Miller, Anthony Chatzimanilakis, Sarah Rose Denny, Dean Michael Deveni, Saeed Egal, Mark Andre Gaudreau, Jason Gagne, Richard Baudouin, Renald LePage, Oliver Murdoch, unknown, Damian Hawley,
Norman Rosenblum, Sylvain Duquette, unknown, Serge Gagnon, unknown, Trevor Stewart, Jean Leduc, Robert Osman, Luke Perrick, Thomas Straub, Danny Croxon, Michael Laverne Wentworth, Douglas Gordon Martin, Colton Pachinos, and Alexis Simon. So we're going to take just a moment of silence to honor those names and to continue to push for their deaths to be honored by us fighting for a world beyond bars. We have said that Prisoner Justice Day has been commemorated in Canada, first inside prisons and then outside as well, since the 1970s. We're going to read now the first set of original demands that were published in Odyssey magazine via Millhaven. And so those are the demands that were first made in the first commemoration of Prisoner Justice Day. And Desmond Cole is going to read those demands.
But it's the great research of people who are part of this coalition that are able to uncover our history here in people in what we know as Canada, so-called Canada, fighting back and documenting how they're fighting back. And so, as Elle said in Odyssey newsletter, we have the original set of demands. This is titled Prison Justice Day, August 10th, 1979, for the end to senseless deaths in prisons in support of human rights for prisoners. And I'm going to read these demands. They say, to attain the right to meaningful work with fair wages, the right to useful education and training, the right to proper medical attention, the right to freedom of speech and religion, the right to free and adequate legal services, the right to independent review of all prison decision-making and conditions, the right to vote, the right to form a union, the right to adequate work and fire safety standards, the right to open visits and correspondence, the right to natural justice and due process. And as you can see there, it says right afterwards, the demands have not changed substantially over the years. We're in 2023, and I believe we can still say that all this time later, the initial demands of people incarcerated in Canada have not changed, because the conditions of incarceration have not changed. And in many cases, they have been made worse. And the state has found ways to shift, to dodge accountability, to respond to what it receives as criticisms and condemnations with obfuscation. I mean, we're going to talk at some point, I'm sure, this evening about the decision on immigration detention in Ontario, something that seems like it would be a victory to not have more people being sent to specific facilities for immigration detention. But where will they be sent? What does that decision actually mean? What does it mean for the lives of people in immigration detention? The state has many, many ways of shifting when these demands are made by incarcerated people and their families and their supporters to give the veneer of progress and change where none is actually happening.
Thank you, Desmond. I do want to say that I currently have a cold, so I'm trying to be discreet. My nose is running, so we're kind of, you know, this is grassroots broadcasting, so sorry, guys, observing my health crisis on camera. And I'll just say that on that note, things like basic health care are not available in prison, so even something as simple as getting a Tylenol or Advil cold and sinus because you're sick, or just very basic things are not available for those who are inside. And so every time that we experience these sort of mild inconveniences on the outside, I think it's important to remember, especially on a day like today, that something that begins simply in prison can end up as death or as a serious health crisis simply because the very basic medications or healthcare is not available. So we do want to note now, we have an interview coming up. We were planning on reading the current demands from Millhaven, the originating place of those demands we just heard and of the first Prisoner Justice Day. But unfortunately, CSC canceled the recent Millhaven Lifers liaison group meeting, so these current demands have been unable to be communicated. CSC continues to attack the freedom of speech of imprisoned people and to enact reprisals for PJD organizing. So we are not able to share those demands, but we do have with us today a legendary figure in both prison organizing and human rights organizing in Canada, and that is Rick Sauvay, who is joining us now on camera. Welcome, Rick, to the broadcast.
Hello, glad to be here.
So we mentioned this earlier in our introduction, but that was a little while ago. So Rick Sauvay is mostly known, although he did much other organizing, but is particularly known in the law that bears his name in the case for winning prisoners the right to vote in federal and provincial elections. And that decision is a huge landmark case, not only, of course, of the rights of prisoners, but in the general human rights in Canada. So, Rick, if you could begin, could you tell us what Prisoner Justice Day means to you and why it's so important that we're commemorating it right now?
Prison Justice Day for me. It memorializes those that have lost their lives inside, those that are still losing their lives inside, families of the prisoners. It's something that I still practice every year. Mostly at home, I send some emails out to friends, but yeah, it has a huge impact on me and my friends and family.
Could you tell us about the origins of this day? So you were on the ground at the time when this sort of organizing was getting started. So could you give us a bit of historical perspective on this day and the kind of organizing that took place?
Well, when I got to Millhaven in 79, got arrested in 78. So Prison Justice Day had already started, but back then we would all just go out into the yard, the main yard, refuse to come in. We refused to work. We didn't eat. We had just a demonstration in the yard. Everybody got charged. It was an institutional charge. You would lose 3 days good time, but serving a life sentence, good time didn't apply to us. But the whole prison population would vote. I remember the 1 year we burned an effigy of the Solicitor General in the yard. We'd always go over the different demands there was a lot of, I was at Millhaven, there was about 15 people lost their lives while I was there over five year period. I still have nightmares about some of that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Rick, it's Desmond Cole. It's a pleasure to speak with you.
Nice to speak with you.
Thank you. I imagine that there must have been some fear in the early organizing of Prisoner Justice Day of the kind of reprisal that people could face for doing these kind of things. And I wonder in the organizing how you all talked about what the consequences could be and why it was important to press on anyway.
Well, we didn't care what the consequences were going to be. We just wanted, we wanted to be recognized. Some of the things that were taking place inside the prison and just to get the word out about some of the injustices that we were experiencing inside. SHU was still at Millhaven back then, and you could hear every night, my range was 2M, and so I could look across to SHU, the Special Handling Unit. And every night, those guys were getting gassed. There was, you hear yelling out, so-and-so's getting beat. And they would come in with the big water hoses. And so almost every night at Millhaven, you could hear what was going on. Those guys would be rocking all night, yelling. I still hear those screams. We didn't care what the consequences were going to be for us. You know, what more could they do? They'd already stripped us of our dignity. They stripped us of our rights. There was really nothing more that they could do to us.
Now, we know about your advocacy, about the ability for prisoners to be able to vote. But you heard, you were part of the broad, you were watching the broadcast, we know, before you came in, and you saw that long list from 79 of all the other things, the right to vote, perhaps the only thing on that list where a very substantial change has come. And I wonder how you reflect on that in all this time, that it's been so difficult to make these substantial changes that prisoners were demanding back in the late 1970s.
Yeah, when I was looking over rights, what we're looking for is rights, recognition. And I still go into all the different prisons in the Ontario region with St. Leonard's. And inmate pay has not gone up, but the cost of living has. Adequate health care. You get health care, but they've downloaded so much of the cost of medications and glasses and everything else onto the prisoner. They just, it's outrageous they haven't had a pay raise in the prisons since 83 when that pay structure came in. Adequate work. You know, one of the things that corrections does is they, which I refer to as a pendulum swing, is they swung one whole way, focusing on programming within the institution and taking away jobs. So you go into, when I go into Millhaven or Collins Bay or any of the institution, there is no work. For so many prisoners don't have opportunities for employment. Some of the things that they've done over the past few years, for example, is they've brought in a new terminology, and it's called STG, Security Threat Group. So any prisoners that are identified by that, they get screened out of employment. They get screened out of programming. They get screened out of, and corrections doesn't have anything to help those that have had gang affiliation to get away from it. But there's so many guys, prisoners, that aren't gang members, but have that label put on them. And when I first heard that security threat group, I thought, Jesus, this sounds like terrorism. What a horrible thing to say to somebody. That makes it sound like a terrorist. And then I looked at my own parole papers, because I'm still on late parole, and I noticed that I'm down as STG, but inactive. And I, how the hell did I come up with that? I've been out of prison since I got parole in 95. How did I get labeled as STG? And so when I go, some of the things that I've done over the years is I developed a program, a group it's called Breakaway for and it was the prisoners that asked me to do this. And so I've delivered that in the max and the medium and then the minimums. And it was shocking going back in and seeing the new max in Collins Bay. Oh my God, when I went in and saw that, I was completely shocked. I think it's cruel and unusual punishment, that unit. I think it should be shut down. There's no employment for any of the guys in there. It's barbaric the way that unit is. What I saw, I believe it was barbaric going in there. They've got a little wee exercise yard. At least when I was in Millhaven, we had exercise yard and stuff like that. We even had a hockey rink at one point. And then that all got taken away. But when I went in and saw how little space there was in the exercise yard and the segregation where one unit can't be with another unit. And they've done that whole divide and conquer thing to the extreme. But yeah, there's, when I first started working with Lifeline in 99, I started actually the end of 98, I got hired. I was always going in trying to encourage, so many of the men to try and move forward and not. And now I go in and I see guys that I've been working with for 24 years that are still inside. I was just in Bath the other day last week doing a group in there. And some of the men that I was talking to, I know they're going to die in prison. And over the years, I've seen more and more of the clients that I've worked with have passed away inside. And yeah, it's disheartening.
You've been listening to the Prison Radio Show here on Ski T90.3 FM. Thank you for tuning in to our Prisoner Justice Day special. Thank you to Virginia Yasmin for help with today's show. You can check out past episodes at prisonradioshow.wordpress.com. Our schedule has changed. The next show will air on August 29th from 6 to 7. So we're on the air every other Tuesday evening now from 6 to 7. If you have questions, email us. prison@skut.ca. You can call us collect from a 438-5114 area code. 438-858-6116 is our number. Thank you for tuning in to the Prison Radio Show. Please stay tuned.
Across Canada and internationally. I'm your host for the evening, Kim Dominique Ferguson, and we have a beautiful evening of music and discussion lined up for you tonight. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 on your FM dial.
Them a man clown, so me walk on them. Me no love chat, but me a want them. Tell them this a real shengeng and them. No girl can't see me as a problem. Them a man clown, so me walk on them. Me no love chat, but me a want them.